The winter was temporary. The problem is that the temperature is going to start rising soon. Eternal summer is what we're actually concerned about. Being in Kansas City at the IAC, we were surrounded by people who understood that and were all striving for the same goal. Besides, it's not a good idea to keep all your eggs in one basket, right? All the space program is doing is making another basket for eggs.
Ma'am, I appreciate your thoughts. But there are economic forces at work here that I don't expect you to understand. This is all about big business seeing an opportunity to make a buck off the government. It's conspiracies and shadows all the way down.
Nathaniel drew a breath.
I'm the lead.
I dropped my purse on the floor to stop him. Oh, I'm such a klutz. Having him say that he was the lead engineer for the space program while we were trapped on a ship with these folks? I was already too angry to continue the conversation, and it wasn't going to go anywhere better from there. Lynn, do you remember how I was always dropping things? She joined me in changing the subject, bless her, and from there on the conversation was perfectly ordinary. What did we talk about? I don't even know. Everything? Nothing? It was just normal. Until I ran into Lynn, I hadn't realized how far outside of normal our life had become. They had a son. They were hoping for another. They had a mortgage, for God's sake. A mortgage. Nathaniel and I were too afraid of the future to even move out of our studio apartment, and the Bromenshankles were planning 20 years into the future with a mortgage. The next day, Nathaniel came with me to the studio. It was a relief to have him there. At a show about science, Dr. Nathaniel York of the IAC was quite the celebrity, so I was able to fade back and just be Mrs. York for a while. Mind you, I think Nathaniel was turning up the charm in order to draw attention from me. It meant that I didn't have to carry on small talk with anyone. More than once, I thought about the doctor he'd taken me to and had some regret for not having that prescription filled. But I only threw up once, and I don't think that anyone except Nathaniel knew. And then it was time to go to places. The assistant, whose name I still couldn't remember, appeared at the makeup table. Dr. York, we're ready for you now. Nathaniel turned toward him and opened his mouth, then shut it again with a laugh.
You're not talking to me.
He bent down to kiss my cheek and whispered,
Prime numbers are your friend.
He knew me so well. I whispered back, Later I'll have to see if you're divisible. A coughing laugh was my reward, and he blushed a little, which was always a bonus.
Only divisible by one.
Straightening, he gave me a wink and stepped back. It was marginally less terrifying to go with the assistant this time, though whether that's because I knew what to expect or because I hadn't had as much time to get worked up, I couldn't tell you. I was mostly fine, just mild butterflies. I didn't need to be drugged, thank you very much. Until the assistant turned to Nathaniel and said,
I'll be back to show you where you can watch, Dr. York.
No. The word was out of my mouth before I knew why I didn't want Nathaniel watching. It was why he'd come, after all. And he'd seen the other broadcast. It wasn't as if I was about to do something shocking or even difficult. Never mind, it's fine. Nathaniel watched me for a moment.
You know, I think I'd rather watch from the control booth. See how they do this stuff.
What will people think? He knew me so well, and it made no sense that I was afraid to make a mistake in front of him. Goodness knows he'd seen me be foolish plenty of times. Like the dandelion green salad disaster. And yet I was nodding at him now. That sounds like a fine idea. Then it was off through the hallways of the studio onto the soundstage and then on my mark at the fake door. Beyond the door, the assistant director said,
We're live in 5, 4, 3.
3 was a prime number. So was 5. I breathed through my mouth. 7, 11, 13. The assistant held his clipboard and nodded to the stage. That was my cue. I put my hand on the knob and walked through, smiling. Don looked up with a grin.
Dr. York, boy, am I glad you're here. Rita and I were just trying to figure out what fuel to use for our bottle rocket.
Beside him, Rita had a bottle with fins on the side like a toy rocket. This time she wore a blue dress, spangled with stars. As it happens, I can help with that. I walked to the mark like an old hand and found myself smiling at Rita. She smiled back. It might have been acting, but still, this was why I was here. And now I wished Nathaniel were there to see me.
The miniature rocket we'd made from a bottle filled with baking soda and vinegar lifted off the makeshift launch pad in a spray of foaming gas. It arced above the height of the set. Off-camera, a pair of stagehands with a blanket caught the rocket as it dropped back down. Rita clapped her hands with delight.
Golly, that's keen, Dr. York!
She turned to Don.
Say, Mr. Wizard, what would happen if we used a bigger rocket?
He laughed and put a hand on his hip.
You remember those calculations that Dr. York showed you?
Oh, sure.
She beamed at me.
So all I'd have to do is figure out how much the new rocket weighed. I could do that.
Mr. Wizard handed her the sheet of paper we'd been using earlier.
All right, then. I'll see you next week.
From behind the cameras, the director said,
And we're out. Good work, people.
I sagged against the counter inside as a sort of brightness drained out of me. TV was nothing like doing calculations, not really, since these problems were all things that we'd discussed beforehand. But the precision with which the entire studio worked to pull off this live broadcast, it did remind me a little of the dark room on launch day, as dozens of competent people focused on one goal. Don joined me in leaning on the counter.
You're a natural at this.
I barked a laugh. There's nothing natural about television.
No, I suppose not.
He loosened his tie and beckoned me to walk off the set with him.
Still, you make math seem interesting.
Well, it is. I shrugged. Oh, I know it isn't for most folks, but I think they've just been put off by people who taught them to be afraid of numbers.
That's a nice perspective.
He held the door to the soundstage for me so we could head into the labyrinth of hallways back to the dressing rooms.
Did Nathaniel stick around?
He was watching from the control room. He might still be there, in fact, watching them wind up the loose ends.
If you ask me, the IAC could do worse than create a show with the two of you, like the Johns Hopkins Science Review, but for space.
Don paused at the door to his dressing room.
Say, how long are you two in town?
We're flying home tomorrow. I was not going to even remotely address his idea of me hosting a show. About the only comfort I could derive from the suggestion was that I was doing an adequate job masking my terror.
Well, if you don't have dinner plans, why don't you join me and Marilita?
That would be lovely, but we've got a date with Adler Planetarium. I shrugged ruefully. When Nathaniel had manfully not suggested heading over to check in on the astronaut training program, I made the offer. It's supposed to be a mini vacation, but we're both working.
Next time, then.
I kept the smile on my face as I said goodbye and managed to make it down to my own dressing room before I started shaking. Next time. This was never going to stop. I shut the door and sat down on the little couch. Nothing bad had happened to me. I was fine. 3.14159. Leaning forward, I rested my head on my knees and let the wool of my skirt cocoon my face.
My dear lady, your body is not supposed to react to stress in this way.
I needed to pull myself together before Nathaniel got back from the control room or he would worry. I was not sick. I was fine. Deep breaths. Slow, deep breaths, pushing past the knot of tension in my abdomen. 2, 3, 5, 7, 11. The show had gone well. Don was pleased. I hadn't been eaten by bears. Someone knocked on the door. I sat up fast enough that the room grayed a little at the edges of my sight. Wiping my eyes, I pasted on a smile. Come in. Don opened the door. His face was tight, and worry pinched his brows together.
Elma, you'd better come with me. It looks like Nathaniel has gotten some bad news.
The room went cold. I moved from sitting to standing at Don's side without a transition. What sort of bad news?
I don't know for sure.
He led me down the hall. My hands were numb and I couldn't feel the floor. I think I knew even before he said it.
But on the radio, they're saying that a rocket exploded.
22.
Propane is urged to end bus fumes. Air control head to ask city to use bottled gas. Chicago, Illinois, December 4th, 1956. Dr. Leonard Greenberg, city commissioner of air pollution control, asserted yesterday that the use of propane gas, familiarly known as bottled gas, could eliminate noxious fumes from buses. These fumes are said to contribute to the alleged greenhouse effect caused by the meteor. However, the mayor of Chicago questioned whether such an overhaul of the bus system was really necessary.
In the writer's room, there was a long table with chairs for 10 people. Nathaniel sat alone on one side of the table, hunched over the telephone. He had a hand pressed over his eyes as he listened to whoever was on the other end of the line. A broken pencil lay on the table in front of him. When I came in, he didn't look around. Don pulled the door shut behind me. My heels were unnaturally loud as I crossed the room, and still, Nathaniel kept his head down.
Yeah. If you have the altitude, the computer should be able to tell you how much propellant was left.
Pulling out a chair, I tried not to let it scrape against the linoleum. I sank into it with a rustle of crinoline. I lay a hand on Nathaniel's back to let him know that I was there, I guess, as if he hadn't heard me. His back was rigid and soaked with a cold sweat.
No, no. I understand. But... right. It will at least tell the firefighters how bad the burn is going to be.
I could just barely hear the person on the other end of the line. Someone from the IAC, I presumed, and probably Director Clemens.
Oh. Oh, I see.
He sighed and bent his head even farther down.
No. We can't account for fuel on the farm itself.
My heart stuttered. Farm? The flight path of the rockets was carefully calculated to not pass over any towns or farms. From what Don had said, I thought the rocket had exploded on the launch pad. That happened in tests, but not with proven rockets like the Jupiter class.
Right. Yeah. Elma's done, so we'll head straight back.
He nodded, pulling the base of the phone closer.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Then he hung up. He sat there staring at the table, or maybe with his eyes closed. I couldn't tell which, with his hand still shielding his eyes. What happened? He sat back, finally dropping his hand. His eyes were bloodshot and tear tracks stained his cheeks.
They're still sorting that out. But it looks like the booster separated too soon, knocked it off course.
Oh, God.
Rocket fell on a farm.
He pressed his hands against his face again.
God damn it.
What do you say to that? Was anyone there?
Whole place is in flames. Gah.
He wiped his eyes with his sleeve and pushed away from the table to stand.
I need to get back.
Of course. Though what either of us could do, I didn't know. It's not your fault.
I'm the lead engineer.
Nathaniel turned away from me and stood with his hands on his hips, head bent. The seconds passed between us in ragged breaths. I shouldn't have asked him to come. I'm sorry. All the tension drained out of his shoulders and he slumped.
No, Elma, no.
When he turned, his face was drawn and haunted.
Don't take this on yourself. You're right. It was a routine launch and my being there wouldn't have changed anything.
I wish he believed that.
Flying back from Chicago, 4 hours after the rocket went down, we could still see the column of smoke rising from the farm. Flames licked the bottom of the column with hungry orange tongues. It had been a rocket, not a meteorite. That gave no real comfort, not when death had still dropped from the sky. In the seat beside me, Nathaniel moaned. His fists were clenched into tight balls on each knee and his shoulders hunched inward.
Can you fly over it?
I don't think that's a good idea. My husband had been near silent since the phone call. Packing our bags had fallen mostly to me because when we got back to the hotel, he had been distracted by the radio, which had live coverage from the disaster. There had been children on the farm.
Near it, then?
Nathaniel.
Yes or no?
Yes. We were flying with visual flight rules, so I didn't have to check with the tower to alter our flight path. I steered us toward the farm. Most of the fire had been concentrated on the fields, but it had spread to the house and barn, and the outbuildings. The drone of our engine and the hiss of the wind over the wings matched the lapping of flames. I kept looking at the sky, my hands tense on the yoke. There was a part of me that saw that fire and thought that a meteorite had just hit. Even after I realized that I was looking for ejecta that wasn't going to be there, I still kept scanning the sky. It was better than watching the ground.
It shouldn't have gone south.
Nathaniel had leaned forward to press his face against the window, trying to look down.
Something must have been wrong with the gyroscopes.
They'll have telemetry back at Mission Control.
I know that.
He snapped. Okay, okay. He stared out the window, fists still knotted. Smoke roiled in front of us and I banked the plane away from the farm.
What are you doing?
Avoiding updrafts. I leveled out and pointed our course toward the IAC, which was alarmingly close. It had a runway for the astronauts to use with their T-33s. Call the tower for me? Get permission to land at the IAC instead of out at New Century Air Center? The window held his attention for another few seconds, and then he nodded and reached for the mic. When we landed, Nathaniel went straight to Mission Control. I had to taxi the plane to the hangar and tuck it in next to the T-33s. Sleek and gorgeous, they were designated for the astronauts to use so they could go to different training locations. My little Cessna looked like a child's toy next to them. I could have pushed it into the hangar by myself. I'm ashamed that even amid this tragedy, I had a moment of coveting those planes. When I climbed out of the Cessna, the stench of burning kerosene and wood and flesh filled the air. I swallowed a gag. Before I could cross the tarmac, another T-33 taxied up to the hangar. I stopped where I was to give the pilot clearance. They were great in the air, but their visibility on the ground was pretty limited. The engine shut down and the cockpit popped open. Stetson Parker climbed out from the front with Derek Binkowski in the trainer seat. That had to have irked Binkowski. Parker hopped down so fast that I wondered if he'd had time to run through the complete shutdown checklist. More likely, he made Binkowski do it. Parker saw me and changed course.
How bad is it?
I shook my head. Behind him, Binkowski was climbing out of the cockpit, focused on us like a long-range scanner seeking any glimmer of information. I had none. We just got here. You fly over? He nodded, face grim, and turned back to the building.
I wonder how long they'll ground us.
That's what you're thinking about? People are probably dead and you're worried about the next flight? Stopping, he drew himself up straight and cracked his neck. Then he turned.
Yes, that's what I'm worried about. I ride these things and I ask the men on my team to ride them, so yes. I'm wondering how long it will take them to figure it out because this was an unmanned flight. But that rocket could have been carrying me or Binkowski or Le Bourgeois, whose daughter you so charmed, Lady Astronaut.
As much as I wanted to make a withering comeback, he was right. I'm sorry. I didn't think.
No, you didn't. You never do. You just go after what you want and to hell with anyone who stands in your way.
He turned and stalked off toward Mission Control. Binkowski gave a long, low whistle.
What was that?
He hates me.
I know. I mean, why?
The astronaut was lanky and stood with his head half-cocked to the side, like he was trying to get a sighting on my brain.
There aren't that many people he hates.
We knew each other during the war? I shook my head. It wouldn't do any good to go into it. I walked back to my Cessna to push it into the hangar. Doesn't matter. And he's a damn good pilot, which is all that counts now, huh? Binkowski shrugged and followed me to the plane. I took up a spot on the other side.
I've seen better.
Like you? I leaned my full body weight against the strut of the plane. He grinned, even with the scent of smoke filling the air, and helped me push.
You know it.
After we got the plane situated, Binkowski fell into step beside me as we walked to Mission Control. Fishing in his pocket, he brought out one of the little black notebooks that most of the astronauts carried.
Say, my niece saw you on Mr. Wizard. Any chance I could get an autograph for her?
Sure. My stomach churned as I took his pen and signed my name on a blank page. On the horizon, the world burned. Nathaniel stayed the night at Mission Control. There were crew quarters, and he decided to bunk down there. He sent me home. I expect he slept about as much as I did, which was not at all. When I got into work, I walked down the hall to his office carrying a change of clothes for him. Everyone I passed had the look of soldiers fresh out of the trenches in the war. Their faces were tight and somehow more gaunt than they'd been 3 days before. I knocked on Nathaniel's door even though it was open, so that I wouldn't startle him as I went in. His blonde hair stuck up like a haystack and dark circles ringed his eyes as he looked up.
Thanks.
Have you eaten? I laid his clean shirt across the back of a chair. On his desk were stacks of telemetry readings. He had a pencil in one hand going down the list of numbers.
Not hungry.
My cafeteria will be open.
I'm not.
The muscle at the corner of his jaw ticked as he worked.
Hungry.
All right, I'm sorry. I backed toward the door. I just wanted to help, but I was in the way. Nathaniel sighed and dropped his head so his chin nearly rested on his chest.
Wait.
Wiping a hand across his eyes, he stood with part of his face shielded.
Elma, I'm not mad at you. I'm sorry. I'm being curt and rude, and I'm... Will you shut the door?
I nodded, pushing the door closed. When it latched, Nathaniel let out an enormous sigh and sank into his chair.
I'm a mess.
Why don't you take a break?
Because everyone wants to know what happened, and I don't know.
He tossed his pencil on the desk.
I don't know. The range safety officer should have ordered the self-destruct when it went off course, and he didn't. But I don't know why it blew up in the first place, and I should.
I came around his desk and stood behind him. Putting my hands on his shoulders, I leaned down to kiss the top of his head. He smelled of sweat and cigarettes. You will. No. No, that wasn't cigarette smoke. It was the stink of the burning farm. Nathaniel shook his head and the muscles under my hands jerked with the movement.
There's probably going to be a government inquiry.
I dug my thumbs into his tight muscles and he grunted. Working in little circles, I leaned all my weight on him. Parker was wondering how long they'd be grounded.
It'll take months to go through everything.
He rubbed his forehead.
We'll have to push the moon launch back, too.
The moon launch wasn't scheduled to use the same type of rocket, so it shouldn't be affected by the flaw in this one. On the other hand, this one wasn't supposed to have a flaw. Plus, the orbital platform would be set back with the loss of the payload. Nathaniel cleared his throat, and the muscles in the back of his neck tightened again.
Say, Elma.
Right here. He swallowed.
I don't think I can. I think I'll need to stay here for the next couple of months.
I figured. Any chance I had of getting him to take a vacation was pretty much out the window now. I grimaced. I'd chastised Parker for wondering about being grounded, and here I was worrying about vacations. I was a jerk.
That means I won't be able to go to your nephew's bar mitzvah.
My hands stopped moving of their own accord. Oh. I bent my head and resumed the massage as I tried to sort out my thoughts. I didn't want to leave Nathaniel alone, not with the amount of pressure he was under. But Herschel needed me there, and it was Tommy's bar mitzvah, for crying out loud. Do you mind if I go by myself?
Thank God.
He spun in his chair to face me.
I was all prepared to convince you that you needed to go.
I brushed the hair back from his face. See? You needn't have worried. I'll abandon you at a moment's notice. He grinned, but the movement was pained.
Falser words were never spoken.
He slid his arms around me and pulled me close.
Thank you.
For?
I can't yell when I go out on the floor. I want to. I want to scream and gnash my teeth. So, thank you for giving me a place where I can be awful and find my way back again.
23.
Jupiter rocket explosion is linked to human error. Kansas City, Kansas, December 12, 1956. United Press International. Failure to transcribe a program correctly, apparently a human error, was blamed for Tuesday's explosion of a second stage for the Jupiter moon rocket in a preliminary report. The rocket flew off course and crashed onto a farm, killing 11. Government inquiries are scheduled to determine if the disaster was preventable.
I was not happy about leaving Nathaniel behind, but as he predicted, the government scheduled inquiries about the crash. Beside the IAC's own work looking into the explosion, they also needed to prepare documents that laymen could understand. The smart thing to do would have been to take a commercial plane to California, but I wanted to clear my head, and flying seemed an excellent way to do that. However, Nathaniel insisted, and maybe occasionally I can be not an idiot. Whatever. The end result was that I wound up on my first commercial flight. I was not impressed. The only good thing about it was that they served cocktails, which I couldn't have enjoyed if I were the pilot. The view was terrible. The pilot bounced twice when landing, and he didn't even have any crosswinds as an excuse. But just being able to stand up and leave the plane without running through a checklist, that was nice. Walking off the plane and seeing my brother waiting, glorious. My brother stood with Doris, Tommy, and Rachel at his side. It looked as if California continued to treat him well. He had a tan and wore a light Hawaiian shirt printed with arcing hibiscus. The kids had sprouted like weeds, and Tommy was nearly as tall as his father. It had been 3 years since I'd seen them. Rachel hung back a little, but she was grinning with dimples in her round cheeks.
Aunt Elma!
Tommy wasn't shy, though. Never had been. He was the first to fling himself across the space between us, rocking me back with the force of his hug.
You came! There's a great place to throw gliders from our new house, and I made a really cool one, and it's not from a kit either!
Herschel rocked forward on his crutches.
Easy, Tiger. Let's get Aunt Elma home before you plan her whole itinerary.
Releasing my nephew, I beckoned to Rachel. Do I get a hug? She nodded and submitted to an embrace. I had to crouch, but not nearly as much as I had last time I saw her. Doris rested a hand on her daughter's shoulder.
Tell her about your club, Rachel.
Her face turned up toward me with wide eyes.
We started a lady astronaut club? It's really neat. That's great, sweetie.
My stomach twisted as the reason that she was suddenly shy became clear. I wasn't just her aunt anymore. I was someone. A lady astronaut had come to call.
Maybe I can visit it, huh?
Rachel nodded, and her eyes got bigger and brighter. Then she turned back to her mother, her hands pressed together like she'd won a prize. What did I expect? I hadn't seen her in 3 years, and now I was... If I were an actual astronaut, I wouldn't mind it so much, I think. It's just that people called me Lady Astronaut because I wasn't allowed to be one. That was the thing that rubbed. The reason I was known at all was because I was agitating for a role I couldn't have. Having folks call me that? Having my niece do it? It was like being jealous of a character on TV, except that character was me. Can you be jealous of yourself? I straightened, and finally the path to hug my brother was clear. He'd shaken off the cuff of one of his crutches and transferred it to his other hand so he could hug me without the metal pole knocking into my back. I wrapped my arms around him. Despite the hibiscus printed all over it, his Hawaiian shirt smelled like lavender.
Oh, I've missed you.
You've lost weight.
He pulled back, eyes pinched behind his glasses.
We'll talk.
It was a damn good thing that Nathaniel wasn't with me, or I'd have given him such a look right then.
Well, that won't last long with Doris's cooking.
I let go of my brother to greet my sister-in-law.
I don't know.
She gave one of her trilling laughs, which ran up and down a scale.
I'm planning on putting you to work.
Herschel didn't tell you that?
Well, that's why I'm here.
I wouldn't know how to take a vacation if one fell on me. Although that is what our vacations had a disturbing tendency to do. I remember when Herschel had his bar mitzvah. He's 7 years older than I am, but it's one of those early memories that stuck. Or parts of it did. I remember that I had to stretch up to see him over the top of the pew and that he stumbled over the words when he was reading the maftir portions. Afterward, being six and full of belief in my own infallibility, I announced that I wouldn't make that sort of mistake when it was time for my bar mitzvah. He didn't laugh at me like a lot of boys would. I remember him, balanced on his crutches, looking with pain at our father. That distress on what was a happy day is the part of my memory that is still so strong and so much my brother. He sat down and patted the sofa beside him, and then explained that girls don't get to have a bar mitzvah. It's different now, but that's the way the world worked in 1934. I cried, and he held me. That's my big brother for you, in a nutshell. It was also the first time that I understood what being a girl meant. As we sat in the pews for Tommy's bar mitzvah, I wanted to pull Rachel onto my lap and tell her that she could do anything she wanted, but it would be a lie. That sorrow for Rachel didn't stop me from being proud of my nephew as I watched him. My nephew had spent the week practicing his Hebrew over and over. Apparently, he'd heard the story from Herschel about how he hadn't practiced his maftir enough. Tommy wouldn't make that mistake. He said it while he was running up the stairs. He said it carrying out the trash. He said it while he was throwing gliders on a hill overlooking the ocean with me. When they called him up to the bima, he looked like such a dapper young man, in a suit, with his bow tie snugged up against his collar and a neatly pressed prayer shawl draped over his shoulders. Herschel slid out of the aisle and followed Tommy to the front with the rattle and click of crutches and dress shoes. Beside me, Doris gave a little sobbing breath and pressed her handkerchief to her eyes. I was glad mine was already in my hand. Herschel's voice cracked as he said,
"Blessed is he who has now freed me from the responsibility of this one."
Thank God for handkerchiefs. Mine was going to be soaked by the end of service. Then Tommy pulled back his shoulders and recited,
Lo marubahim mikol ha'amim Adonai bahim vibahar bahim ki atem hamiat mikol ha'amim.
No wobble, no fear, just a clear, youthful voice reaching toward heaven and God's ears. It is not because you are the most numerous of peoples that the Lord set his heart on you and chose you. Indeed, you are the smallest of peoples. I was going to need another handkerchief.
Herschel and I sat at a table off to the side of the banquet room they'd rented. Doris was across the room talking to one of her many cousins. In the middle of the dance floor, Tommy gyrated with a gaggle of his friends resplendent in a white evening jacket. They looked so young. What sort of world would they inherit? Herschel nudged me with his shoulder.
What was that sigh?
Doomsday stuff. I waved it away and picked up my champagne glass. This party must have cost them a fortune. France hadn't been able to get a vintage ripe since before the meteor.
Ah, you're also looking at those kids and doing weather projections 40 years out, huh?
He nodded and picked up his own glass, lifting it in a toast.
To the long summer.
To space. I clinked my glass against his and sipped it, bubbles rising up to bring flavors of apricot and flint along the top of my palate. Do you think they'll remember what the stars looked like? He shook his head.
Rachel doesn't.
My breath caught in my throat. Of course. She'd only been 5 when the meteor hit. By the time the dust settled, there was enough steam in the air to give us near constant cloud cover. That's appallingly tragic.
Not for her.
He pointed with his champagne flute toward where she spun with some of her friends. Her little taffeta party dress twirled out around her.
She thinks all of this is normal and just the way the world works.
Even with a father who's a meteorologist?
Oh, she has an intellectual understanding of it, but it's like, I don't remember what it was like to walk. The polio hit when I was so young, you know?
He rested a hand on his crutches where they sat propped against the table.
This is my normal. Intellectually, I know that it's not, that a disease paralyzed my legs, but I have no memory of being able to move them.
I hadn't known that, oddly. But I suppose my own memory was just as skewed. My brother had used crutches since before I was born. That was just normal. So I guess I had first-hand experience that proved his point. These kids wouldn't realize how much things had changed.
How bad does the global climate look? I'm so focused on the IAC that I haven't been tracking it.
Well, the cold went a little longer than we projected, but I think that's because our models were based on volcanic eruptions and ash is non-reflective. Plus, we didn't take into account how long things burned. I mean, we did. But the data from the early days was pretty scarce, so...
He shrugged, light glinting off his glasses as he looked toward the ceiling.
The greenhouse effect is still going to hit, but it's looking like the ozone wasn't damaged as badly as we thought it would be. Again, modeling based on A-bomb testing.
So, it's not an extinction event?
This is why I'm not allowed to talk to the press.
He wiped the back of his hand across his mouth.
The Earth is going to heat up. That's going to be permanent. But if we can limit the amount of greenhouse gases we generate, then we might, and I stress the word might, be able to keep the Earth habitable, or at least habitable longer.
Well, that's something. After that, what do you say? We sat and watched people dancing. Doris's brother had pulled her out on the dance floor. I was a little jealous of her for getting to dance with her brother. Or anyone, really. I cleared my throat. Nathaniel is sorry he couldn't be here. Herschel waved that away.
The crash, I understand.
Still, all of these people, and we were the only Wexlers. I wasn't even properly a Wexler anymore, and Rachel wouldn't be when she got married.
How's he doing?
Fairly well, all things considered. The actual answer was poorly, but if I was going to complain about him discussing me with my brother, I couldn't very well go disclosing Nathaniel's troubles. Across the room, the jazz band struck up another tune. I don't remember what, because I could feel Herschel's next question gathering.
And you?
His tone was too quiet. He rolled the stem of his glass between his fingers, but he was staring at me. I could blow off his question, answer it socially, lie. But on the day of my nephew's bar mitzvah, when I was sitting next to one of three blood relatives I had left in the world, I kept my gaze on the dancers, maintaining the placid smile Mama had taught me how to use. Remember that semester at Stanford?
Yeah.
Not needing me to specify which semester, he reached over and put a hand on my arm.
God, Elma, I'm so sorry. I'd wondered, when you talked about Mr. Wizard, I was hoping you were joking.
Twice, before the show. In this beautiful ballroom with all of these smiling people, I couldn't bring myself to say the word vomit. My muscles were so tight they started to tremble. I took a breath and tried letting it out again, trying to let the tension go with it. And before every interview?
And has it?
He wet his lips. Looking around us in case anyone was going to approach, he leaned toward me.
Have you tried it again?
I was already shaking my head to stop him. No. I broke down, and that's the worst Nathaniel has seen. He knows that I had a breakdown in college and why, but not the details. Please don't tell him. Please, please don't tell him.
I won't.
He squeezed my arm.
I won't. I promised I never would, and that's going to my grave, even if that's the worst possible metaphor I could have used.
My own laugh surprised me. It cut through the ballroom in a space between notes and bounced off the far wall. Heads turned our way, but I think that all they saw was a brother and sister sitting together while nervous giggles rocked them. They certainly didn't see the memory of the year that I tried to hang myself. 24.
Speed is key to success of space program by Dr. Nathaniel York, lead engineer, International Aerospace Coalition, February 4th, 1957.
Time is the scarcest resource and the most essential to humanity's space efforts. Since there is no way to increase the supply of this resource, the only sane choice is to make the best use of the small and rapidly dwindling quantity available.
The contrast between the ballroom for Tommy's bar mitzvah, which had been all baby blue plaster and gilding, and the congressional hearing rooms of the new capital could not have been stronger. The new capital stood as a testament to the austere and modern aesthetic of post-meteor fashion, stainless steel framing squares of granite. I was there to support Nathaniel during the inquiry into the Orion 27 crash. When I got back from California, he'd requisitioned me from the computer department to help him prepare the data for the hearing. Other computers could have done the work, but I knew his shorthand. In the 2 months since the crash, we had prepared exhaustive reports with a host of charts and indices. But if the congressman asked for a number Nathaniel didn't have, then I could supply it. At least that was the plan. On the second day of the hearings, Senator Mason from North Carolina scowled down from his bench. I almost expected him to have one of those ridiculous wigs judges wore in England.
Now, wait a minute, sir. Wait a minute. Am I to understand that the entire rocket program is so fragile, sir, that a single symbol can undermine it?
Director Clemens shuffled his papers.
No, sir. Although in this instance, it is true that we are looking at a transcription error.
I find that. Yes, sir, I find that hard to believe, sir. I find that hard to believe.
If Mark Twain had been an idiot, this man might have been his embodiment.
I find that very hard to believe.
One might think he found it hard to believe. Senator Wargan, who was one of the few bright spots on the committee, cleared his throat.
Perhaps if we let them explain the equation in question.
My heart seized in my chest as if someone had hooked a live wire to my spine, sending current through my body. That was my cue. This was why I was here. I tried to draw breath, but it was too shallow. I tried for another. God, panting wasn't going to help. As I wiped my hands on my skirt, Nathaniel stood.
Let me try to walk you through it.
My gaze had been fixed on the polished wood of our table. I dragged it up to follow Nathaniel. He walked away from the table, drawing the eyes of everyone in the room off of me. He didn't have to do that. I could have explained it. That's why I was there. I wiped the sweat off my forehead and watched him inch through the explanation. Explaining that a single superscript had been dropped by the man responsible for transcribing our handwritten formulas onto punch cards was simple. Explaining what that superscript did? You had to understand the entire formula. I should be the one explaining it. Nathaniel was doing it because he'd taken one look at my sweaty, shaky self and seen me as a liability. Pressing my hands against my skirt, I bowed my head and waited. When he sat down, I leaned over. You should bring Helen tomorrow. She wrote most of the program.
Helen is Chinese.
He sorted his papers as Director Clemens answered a question about the range safety officer's duties. Taiwanese.
The point is, Mason wouldn't get past her accent.
He rested his hand on my knee.
I need to.
But then he turned away in answer to something Mason asked from the stand.
Yes, sir. All of the rockets are equipped with a self-destruct device in case of malfunction.
So, this is something, sir, that happens often enough that you plan for it.
We would be irresponsible if we did not have contingency plans, even for theoretical occurrences.
Clemens's voice sounded like he'd been sucking on lemons and still trying to smile.
Sir.
For the rest of the session, my role stayed that of a spectator. The only silver lining to the whole ordeal was that since Senator Wargan was on the committee, Nicole came in to watch at some point. As we stood to recess for lunch, her lemon-yellow dress was a welcome spot of color amid the stainless steel and granite of the hearing room.
You look piqued.
She swirled over to Nathaniel, skirt billowing out.
Both of you, no offense, but you need to get out of this tomb. Join me for lunch?
Nathaniel stood, stretching.
Thanks, Mrs. Wargan, but I have some things to go over with Director Clemens before the next session.
Sandwiches for us.
Clemens rose from his chair.
Thank you for the offer, though. Well, may I at least still Elma?
I shook my head. I should stay. Nathaniel took me by the shoulders and turned me away from him.
Go on. You can bring me back a piece of pie.
Nicole linked her arm through mine.
Pie? Perfect. I know just where we're going.
She half-dragged me out of the hearing room and into the bustling, hushed halls of the new Capitol. Congressional aides hurried down the thick blue carpet that lined the halls. It was the only spot of softness amid the crisp right angles in stone. We can't go too far, though. I kept having to blink to get my eyes to focus. I need to be back when the session starts.
Well, I happen to know that one of the senators, who shall remain nameless, always takes a two-hour lunch. We've got plenty of time. Besides, you and I, we need to talk.
The restaurant that Nicole took me to was pre-meteor splendor, with tall ceilings, crystal chandeliers, and mirrors everywhere. It had gilding like something out of a Regency romance novel, and I felt hopelessly out of place. For the hearings, I had confined my wardrobe to dark pencil skirts. Today's was navy, with a plain white blouse, to blend as much as possible with the sea of men in their suits. The floral scarf Nicole had tied about her neck framed her face with a softness more appropriate to our luncheon setting. She broke that illusion when the waiter came to take our order.
Two martinis, doubles, deviled eggs to start us, and then filet mignon for both, rare and bloody.
Oh, I shouldn't.
2-hour lunch. Plenty of time to absorb and recover.
She folded her menu.
Besides, you look brittle enough to crack, and I want to soften you up before I make my suggestion.
You mean ordering for me doesn't count as suggestions? She waved her hand, diamond bracelet sparkling.
Please, you would have ordered a salad and eaten a third of it. At least when you just pick up the steak, you'll get a little nutrition.
Not bad?
You and Nathaniel both.
She shook her head and placed a hand on mine.
Elma, dear, I've seen more than my fair share of inquiries, and you are both textbook cases. Your clothes are loose, so not eating. Foundation is heavier under your eyes, so not sleeping. Probably barely talking outside the chamber.
She wasn't wrong. I was saved by the arrival of the martinis. What's your suggestion? Nicole pushed mine firmly toward me.
Drink.
Oh, not bad?
Drink.
She lifted her own glass in a salute and waited until I touched mine to hers and then to my lips. She took a healthy swallow, closing her eyes with relish, then set the glass down.
Why isn't Nathaniel using you?
My mouth tasted of brine and juniper as I swallowed.
Well, we did all of our preparations before arriving, and there hasn't been a call for new calculations yet.
I'm talking about having you testify.
I nearly dropped my martini.
Testify? Me? Why in the world would they want to hear from me?
She tilted her head, and I wasn't sure how I thought that scarf made her soft.
Elma, Senator Mason is going to try to use the accident to stop the program.
Yes, well, he's always hated it.
He kept trying to funnel the money to his own state for disaster recovery. To be fair, North Carolina needed it. They got hit with a lot of the fires, and then the acid rain afterward killed most of the farming land.
What does that have to do with me?
Because you're the lady astronaut.
I am not an astronaut!
My voice cut through the low hum of conversation around us. Wealthy and powerful people turned to stare. What must they think? Bending my head, I applied myself to the martini and let the cold burn of the gin distract me.
And the lady astronaut clubs?
The deviled eggs arrived. There was not a chance that I could eat even one of the glistening ovoids.
Your body is not supposed to react this way.
Swallowing, I pushed the martini away from me.
That was NBC's idea. I had nothing to do with it.
Bullshit.
It's true. And Don, Mr. Wizard, objected to the name because boys and girls should be able to be astronauts, or in his Mr. Wizard science clubs.
She shook her head and leaned across the table.
That's not what I mean. You may not have organized the clubs, but the fact that they exist is directly because of you. And Nathaniel isn't taking advantage of your popularity.
I'm not.
You're photogenic. You make rocketry sound exciting and easy. You're funny and
I throw up.
Clapping my hands over my mouth, I closed my eyes and concentrated on breathing. Nicole was trying to help. If I were someone else, her suggestion might work, but not with me. I can't.
When?
Her voice was softer. Lowering my hands, I opened my eyes.
Before every filming. Sometimes after, too.
But not during.
I can't.
Nicole bit her lower lip, then sighed and slid her chair a little closer.
You have to promise me you won't say anything. Lord help me, if the paper gets wind of this. Promise me, Elma.
I shook my head, trying to figure out where this was going, and then realized it looked like I was saying no.
Sorry, yes, of course I promise. Though you're alarming me a little.
Lowering her voice until it was barely audible over the clink of cutlery, She leaned closer still.
After the meteor, I had some trouble. Similar trouble. And then when Kenneth was running for office, it became a problem. I became a problem.
She looked around as if we were in a spy novel.
I can introduce you to my doctor.
I don't want to take drugs. She pulled back, her face frozen in a social smile.
I didn't say anything about medication, of course. The wife of a senator. What would people think?
That fear I understood all too well. I held up my hands to try to soothe her. It's not... I wouldn't... It's just... I talked to a doctor and he recommended... them, but...
I know.
She picked up her martini and stared into it, mouth twisted in an odd smirk.
Believe me, I understand all about the butt. And I was wrong.
It took another week of hearings before I realized that Nicole was right on two fronts. First, that although Nathaniel resolutely was not asking me to testify, he needed me to. Or rather, he needed a computer to testify, and of the ones who worked for IAC, I made the most sense because I'd been helping him prepare and because of my existing visibility. And second, that testifying would make me ill. No, wait. That's not the part she was right about. I already knew that about myself. What Nicole was right about was that I shouldn't have to get sick every time I addressed a group of people. It's funny how once something comes into your consciousness, you begin seeing it everywhere, like seeing your birth date in random places. After talking with Nicole, I began seeing ads for Milltown constantly. At the pharmacy, there was a sign that read, "Ice cream," and then under it, just as large, "Yes, we have Milltown." Or at the grocery store, leafing through a magazine, there were ads for the Happy Pill. Heck, Milton Berle was even joking about renaming himself Milltown Berle. I know that we're pattern-seeking creatures, but at a certain point the prevalence of anxiety began to seem like a Fibonacci sequence of emotion. So I called Nicole's doctor, who also specialized in psychotherapy. This new doctor turned out to be a woman, which was a surprise and a relief. I didn't tell Nathaniel where I was going. He would have understood and gone with me. I just didn't want to admit that I was this weak. I was so ashamed of needing a drug to do something as innocuous as talk. I was smart. Heck, when I wasn't being modest, I was brilliant. I knew that. But the doctor and Nicole were both right, and if this had been any other condition, I would not have balked at medication. So I bundled up and pretended to be stepping out to run some errands. It is the closest I have ever come to outright lying to him, and my skin felt as if it were coated with a layer of slime. I nearly turned back to tell him, but if I had done that, I don't think I would have made it out the door. I would have stayed home instead, just so that I didn't have to lie to him. Dr. Haddad's office was on the ground floor of a brownstone. It felt more like someone's parlor than a medical office. Lamps stood in the corners and created a dim, intimate space. The doctor herself was slender, with sleek, dark hair that she wore straight and cropped at her shoulders. Her black trousers were so alarmingly fashionable that covetousness suddenly overran me. She guided me to an armchair.
Tea?
No, thank you. Pouring a cup for herself, she smiled.
I find it always soothes me, especially in this weather.
It's starting to get warm again.
Mm-hmm. But it isn't there yet.
She held up the cup and smiled over the edge at me.
So, what brings you in this evening?
I swallowed and immediately regretted declining the tea, which would have given me something to do with my hands. I seem to be suffering from anxiety, and I don't know what to do about it. She set her cup down and leaned forward.
My dear, that's what I'm here for.
And I wept. 25.
Peiping may orbit satellite by 1958. U.S. intelligence data note increasing indications of active space program. By John W. Finney, special to the National Times. Kansas City, Kansas, January 9th, 1957. A government intelligence report predicts that Communist China will be able to launch an Earth satellite in 2 years.
The small white pill sat in the center of my palm. The palm itself was coated in a thin sheen of sweat. Overhead, the bathroom fan rattled like an unbalanced airplane engine and masked most of the sounds from the apartment. Nathaniel had been sitting in a chair with Ray Bradbury's new novel. I kept hoping he'd go out, but he hadn't yet, which was probably for the best. If anything went wrong, I should have someone with me. Telling him that I was about to take a tranquilizer would be sensible, but I didn't. Don't ask me why. It wasn't that I didn't trust him, it's just, I don't know. I didn't trust myself. Does that make any sense? Taking the pill was a sign that I had failed. No matter what the doctor said about anxiety being a genuine illness, I couldn't shake my mother's voice. What will people think? What would my husband think? Wetting my lips, I placed the pill in my mouth. The bitter coating curled my tongue, and I swallowed a mouthful of water to wash it down. I set down the glass. Done. In the mirror, my face stared back at me unchanged. Brown eyes. Nose slightly askew. Chin a little too rounded. No horns. Yet. I know it sounds melodramatic, but that 200-milligram pill carried a potent possibility. Please work. 20 minutes. It would be 20 minutes before I could possibly feel the effects. I opened the vanity drawer and hid the bottle among my sanitary napkins. There were few places in our tiny apartment that I could be certain Nathaniel wouldn't go. This was one. Wiping my hands on my skirt, I opened the door and left the bathroom. Nathaniel barely glanced up from the book he was reading. Given the congressional hearings, it was a wonder that he was willing to take the day off. On the other hand, since we couldn't resume our launch schedule until the hearings concluded, there wasn't that much he could do at work. Right. I pulled out one of the chairs at our table and sat down. There were bills to be paid. I pulled the stack toward me and got to work. An hour later, the bills were paid, I'd balanced the checkbook, and I felt fine. I drew a blank sheet toward me and began plotting a trajectory for a moon landing. Possibly, if I thought about it, I was a little slower. Maybe. But no more so than toward the end of a long day. Not that I felt tired, just muted? That's not even the right word. I just felt normal. Whatever that means. The next morning, I checked the bank book, looking for errors. There were none. One of the curtains let in a thin stream of amber light from the streetlights outside our apartment. I curled against Nathaniel and nestled my head on his shoulder. He ran a hand down my arm, leaving a contrail of goosebumps in his wake. His touch explored the contours of my hand and circled my wedding band. I've been lying to you. Sometimes the things I blurt out surprise me. This one didn't. His breath stilled, but under my cheek the beat of his heart sped.
About?
The class I'm taking? Aaron's hadn't cut it as an excuse after the first session. I'm seeing a therapist. All of the tension drained out of his body.
Oh, thank God.
That was not the response I expected. He pulled me closer and kissed my forehead.
I'm glad you're taking care of yourself.
You're not upset that I lied?
Well, yes, but the relief outweighs that.
His hand found my hair and he stroked it back from my face.
And I'll admit to being a little hurt that you didn't feel safe telling me. But not angry, okay? I'm not angry.
My eyes stung and I blinked them clear. You are amazing.
I am in love. That's an important distinction.
Nathaniel turned to kiss my forehead.
Without you, I'm just an average guy.
I laughed and poked him in the ribs. You are not an average anything.
I'm a pretty good administrator. Not bad with numbers.
My hand drifted lower. Good with rockets. He grunted and stretched under my touch. When he relaxed, he pulled me on top of him so that our bodies were pressed full length against each other.
I would say that you're better at handling rockets than I am.
Is that so? I pinned his arms to the bed and lifted myself up to kneel, straddling him. Well, Dr. York.
Yes, Dr. York.
In that case, I have a very... I kissed his neck. Serious. My tongue licked the sweat from his jawline. Question.
Yes, whatever it is. God, yes.
Would it help? There was a rough spot under his chin that he'd missed while shaving. My heart sped up, and I raced ahead to get my words in front of my fear. If I explain the equations to the committee? Nathaniel twisted to look at me, though I couldn't have been more than the same sort of shadowed blur that he was.
Elma.
In my name was a wealth of unsaid thought. Yes, it would help. No, he didn't want to ask me to do it. Yes, he was terrified I would break. No, he didn't want to see me hurt. Yes, he loved me for offering. No, he couldn't accept. I slid off of him to sit on the bed at his side. Remember how when I was in university, I was the only girl in class, so instructors would ask me to explain a math problem in order to show the boys up?
I know. That's why I can't ask you.
Hush, I'm not done.
Okay.
He sat up next to me, shoulders hunched forward.
Sorry.
The thing is, it worked. They were always shamed into doing better because they couldn't stand to have a little girl understand something that they couldn't.
And it was hellishly cruel of the professors.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But if I'm choosing to do it, it's different. True, but I was still sweating and it was no longer from sex. And I'm taking Milltown now.
Oh.
It helps.
Good.
He kissed my forehead.
Thank you for telling me.
So, with this new data set, let's return to my point. The faster we could stop talking about my anxiety, the better. Senator Mason keeps making you go over the equation that caused the rocket to go off course in the first place.
Yes.
I couldn't see his face, but I could imagine his brows knit together in concentration. He will keep making you explain over and over again that the problem was a transcription error when the program was transferred to punch cards. Let me explain exactly how leaving out a single superscript bar caused the program to break. If a woman tells him, he'll have to either pretend he understands it or admit that he's not smart enough to be making a decision on this.
Huh.
He rubbed his head.
Okay. So that might hopefully, finally, make Mason stop harassing us about the error, but the real problem wasn't the transcription failure. And they'll still hound us on that. God.
I reached for his hand and pulled it away from his head. Are you still having nightmares? The nights that he'd woken in a sweat or cried out in his sleep didn't leave this much of a question. It was more of an opportunity for him to come clean with me. And yes, I'm aware of what it means that we had both been lying to each other and ourselves about how we were feeling. His shoulders slumped farther.
Yeah.
I told you mine.
Huh.
His thumb found my ring finger and rolled the wedding band left and right.
The latest was that I was the idiot range safety officer and knew the rocket was going to crash but couldn't order the destruct sequence. I was glued, literally glued, in my chair. Only, of course, it wasn't my chair, it was a seat on an airplane, and I had to watch the whole thing.
When the rocket veered off course, the range safety officer, who was responsible for making the call about the self-destruct sequence, didn't. He waited to see if the course would correct. It didn't. As a result, 11 people had died on the Williams farm where it crashed. 2 of them were kids. He sighed and bent forward at the waist, pulling his hand free of my grip to wrap his arms around his head.
Senator Mason is going to use this to tank the space program. People are already agitating about the resources that are going into it instead of relief here on Earth. It's dead simple for him to use the deaths to sway public opinion.
So let me explain about the new safety procedures. Let me recommend moving the launch site to the equator. We'd wanted to do that years ago, but couldn't get budget approval since the Sunflower facility had already existed. Let me explain what's going to happen to our planet and why space is so important.
This is going to be offensive, and yet.
He sat up. There was enough light from the street that I could just see his eyes pinched with concern.
Why would he listen to you?
Because I'm the lady astronaut. The morning I was to address the congressional hearing, I wasn't afraid of speaking. I was afraid that the medication wouldn't work. I sat there next to Nathaniel, as I always did, a litany of, "Am I calm?" running through my head. I wasn't. I was terrified, but the reaction wasn't as bright. Does that make sense? I was still afraid, but it was like a cloud had come between the fear and me. Yes, it made the whole room a little dimmer, but it also meant that the fear itself didn't cast such dark shadows. The actual test would come when Nathaniel rested a hand on my knee.
Ready?
I managed to nod. I think I smiled. Swallowing was not possible, as my throat had gone completely dry. Nathaniel kept his hand on my knee, out of sight of the committee, as Clemens stood. 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34.
Gentlemen.
Clemens paced around to the front of the table, so all I could see was his back and his hands clasped behind him.
During our deliberations, it has occurred to me that we have neglected to give you an adequate foundation in understanding the root of the accident.
55, 89, 144, 233, 377.
The transcription error.
Senator Mason drawled as he leaned back in his chair.
Correct. I would like to return to that error and have one of our computers explain in detail the effects of that error and the steps that will be taken to ensure that such an error never occurs again.
He turned to the side and gestured at me.
May I present Dr. Elma York? She's the physicist responsible for recognizing the effects of the meteor on our climate and is the pride of our computer department, although you may know her better as the Lady Astronaut from Mr. Wizard.
The Fibonacci sequence dropped out of my mind. This? From Director Control Your Wife Clemens? Whatever his intention, the shock was enough to jar me out of my pattern of fear. Was I calm? No, but I didn't think I was going to throw up either. Taking a deep breath and amazed that I could, I pushed my chair back and stood. Thank you, Director Clemens, distinguished gentlemen of the committee. I focused on Senator Worgen, who did not smile exactly, but his eyes were kind. If you will turn your attention to the blackboard, I'll walk you through the equation that governed the rocket. Senator Mason jabbed his finger at me.
I've been over that, ma'am. Yes, we have.
Oh. I paused to smile. This man, for all his power, was a child in mathematics. I'm so sorry. I thought you were still asking questions because we hadn't explained adequately. I must have misunderstood, of course. So to help me, would you explain the part of the equation that you had questions about? His mouth worked, pursing and grimacing before he nodded.
Maybe you had best proceed. To make certain my colleagues are on level ground.
At his side, Senator Worgen had covered his mouth. His eyes were decidedly crinkled with smile lines. He cleared his throat.
Yes, Dr. York, please start from the beginning.
Very well. To calculate an ascent track, we have the following equation for the acceleration in the direction of the flight path. V equals delta V over dt equals F1 plus AE1 times PE1 minus PA. Now, the F1 is, of course, referring to the thrust of the first booster. That was calculated at, as you can see further down in the equation, 12.8 times 10 to the ninth G's of thrust. I glanced at the bench. Senator Mason's eyes had begun to cross.
Am I going too fast?
No, not at all. Carry on.
And I did. By the time I finished, they either understood or pretended they did, which was actually more useful for Nathaniel's purposes. I didn't throw up. Not even once. And the cherry on the cake? Senator Mason asked for my autograph for his granddaughter. It would have been nice if that had ended the inquiries, but my testimony at least allowed them to move from who